This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Welcome to Book Hype. This is episode 7 of Hyperbull's book podcast. If you've just stumbled across us, Hyperbull is an entertainment site covering news about movies, TV, online media, and of course, books. My name's Marima. You may have noticed I don't sound like Jen. Unfortunately, Jen can't be with us today. She's off having lots and lots of fun, but I have with me today Karen, Kyle, and Mikhail. Hi, guys.
Heyo.
Hello. Hi.
And if you want to get in touch with us, you can contact us at twitter.com/bookhype. Or comment on the posts for Book Hype podcast on hyperbull.com or any of the news posts for books. And we read it all, even though it's very extensive. So let's jump straight in. What are you guys reading this week? Karen, do you want to go first?
Sure. So last week I said I was reading Game Board of the Gods and by Rochelle Mead, and I'm still reading it. So since that's kind of boring, I'm going to pick something I just recently finished, and that was Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. And it was really good. I'm not a huge fan of the classics because I just find them kind of hard to get through, but I really, really enjoyed that book. So I was glad I picked it up.
Very exciting. I'm a big Frankenstein fan, actually. Kyle, what about you?
I am currently reading The Fifth Wave. It's really exciting. Well, some of it's exciting, some of it's not exciting. But anyway, yep, that's what I'm reading.
You finished Game of Thrones, finally?
No, I'm still in the same exact spot for Game of Thrones. It's so boring. I know everything that's going to happen, and I hate it. It's actually made me realize that I'm never again going to watch a movie and then read the book, or watch a TV show and then read the book. It's always going to be book first, then media.
That's a lot of books to read, though, first.
I know. It's going to be hell.
Best of luck. Mikhail, what about you?
I'm still reading a lot of the books that I mentioned last week, and I also started a book called Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell, which I haven't gotten too far into, but the opening section has some really beautiful language, and I'm enjoying it so far.
Very cool. What am I reading? Oh, I just finished Fire in the Sea by Mike Bartlett. And actually, Karen, I think you would be a fan of this because it's very Percy Jackson-esque, but set in Australia. And
cool.
I'm also reading The Cinderella Moment by Jennifer Closter. And that will come out later this year. And that's like a romance Parisian fashion thing. It's very cute. I'm enjoying it. Very light. And I'm also reading Reboot by Amy Tintera. I think that's how you say her name, which is okay. I'm not that far into it, but it reminds me a lot of the Fifth Wave I was telling you guys before. So I'm kind of hoping that it picks up the pace a bit, but the cover design of it and the whole design of the book is like really, really beautiful. So I sort of don't mind because I look really cool when I'm carrying it around because it's a really nice looking book. So that's what we're all reading. Okay, so let's jump into book bites, which is where we just take a small topic to do with the books and just go through it. So this week's topic, I think, is from Karen. And that is, do we like to read books one at a time or multiple at once? So Karen, seeing as this was your idea, what do you do with this?
I usually read books one at a time. I have trouble kind of going back and forth between the stories, and I like just getting through one as quickly as I can and moving on to the other one, because otherwise I feel like, you know, I'll pick up another one and I might not get to the first one. But lately, because I have so much to read and, you know, I'm really trying to do more for the site and do the reviews and the interviews and stuff, I've been finding that I'm reading multiple books at once, and it's really not that bad, but yeah, I definitely prefer to just like read one from cover to cover as quickly as possible and move on to the next one.
Mikhail, what about you?
You know, sometimes I start reading a couple of books at once and inevitably I fail. Unless there's like a reason why and I know I'm going back and forth. But Yeah, like I recently started like 4 books, and it was just like I can't, because also, unless they're all really good, you have books that you just like more than others, and then that I feel guilty. Like I feel like I'm cheating on a book that I started first, and you know, then I have other books that I'm more interested in, but I'm like, I should go back to that other one because I should finish it first. And yeah, so I get like tied up in my own like personification of paper. But
you shouldn't feel guilty.
But that's cute.
Book relationships are polygamous.
You're cheating on your books.
It's fine. Polygamy is accepted in book relationships.
They can hurt me though. You know, I don't know.
I'm just thinking of like books attacking you.
I don't
with
know.
Paper cuts.
Just imagining like sleeping and being bludgeoned by all the books that I've abandoned.
Oh my god, that's a terrifying thing. Why did you put that image in my head?
That's what I'm here for.
Oh, the Twilight books will come back and get me. Only books that never finished. Oh, Kyle, what about you?
I definitely read more than one book at a time. And I remember at one point I was reading Divergent and some other book that was extremely similar to Divergent. And it had to do with, like, a dystopian, and it had a girl in it, and it wasn't Hunger Games. And I confused the characters a lot, and I'm like, never again am I reading 2 dystopian novels at once. Ever. But other than that, I have, like, 4 books that I currently, like, dropped to read The Fifth Wave. So I don't know, does it count if you drop them to read another book and then you go back to like the middle of another book?
I don't know, do you finish The Fifth Wave first? Because if you finish The Fifth Wave first, I think that's like single books at a time.
Yeah, I would finish The Fifth Wave first.
Oh, so you're a monogamist.
I guess technically speaking, yeah.
This was a twist that we didn't see coming.
I know, right?
Although I will say something cool that happened to me once was that I was reading a book on... I was reading a book called Crucible of Gold by Naomi Novik, which is part of her Temeraire series. And I think that was it. And then a book called... I don't know. It was one of the Bloody Jack series by Ellie Meyer. And I was listening to that on audiobook. So, and they both took place like in the sort of Napoleonic era, British characters, and they were on ships. So it was kind of cool because I had 2 totally different stories going on, but like kind of the same language of like 4 decks and aft whatever and sails and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I have like individual settings in my mind for both of these books. And I thought it was really, really kind of cool.
That does sound fun. Well, I think you guys know my answer to this based on like every episode that we've recorded, but I read like 14 books at one time because I'm just really bad at committing to things. And I think maybe I have a short attention span or something. So I'll start reading something and then something else will just look really good. So I'll start reading that one and then I'll find something else that's like completely different. And then I'll remember about the first one that I was reading. So I just like jump back and forth. But I've never had trouble like mixing them up or anything like that. But maybe I've just never read anything that's so similar, you know? Like that may just be luck more than anything else.
Somebody should splice in like boys instead of books. And then this would be a really interesting conversation.
Book hype listener challenge. Seriously.
Yeah, I feel like we're all talking about our personal lives, but like as a metaphor through books, this could be kind of dangerous.
I'm definitely not monogamous when it comes to boys.
I feel like I should be offended right now, so we'll just move on.
I hate 4 boys at a time.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys. Make sure that you let us know if you are a monogamist or a polygamist, as we have decided to refer to them, when you're reading books, and tweet us at Book Hype. I'll be interested to see which way it goes, because it seems like you three are all one at a time and I am multiple. I think that's what we've worked out. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder what this says about me as a person. Anyway.
Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of Book Hype, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their very helpful service. Today, we are recommending, or I am recommending, Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell, because it's a... really interesting book about a semi-interracial friendship slash romance that happens in the 80s between two kids. And the language is really cool and authentic and is narrated by two people, which I always find interesting because you don't get sick of one voice because you can just hop back to the other one. Visit audiblepodcast.com/bookhype to get an audiobook for absolutely free. We thank Audible for their support of the show.
Okay, so let's jump into our main discussion for this week. And as you guys have probably noticed, we haven't told you to read anything or prepare anything or do any homework because we are just going to do a sort of general book news discussion and catch you up on some of the bigger things that are happening in the young adult world or some of the things we just really want to talk about. There's, you know, so much going on, but you can check out hyperbull.com for comprehensive coverage of everything. And these are some highlights. So first of all, Amazon Kindle Worlds opened up recently. And this is the fan fiction buying and selling website that Amazon has set up. And basically, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically the way that it works is they have different fandoms or different books that they have an agreement with. And I think that's basically because the copyright to those are owned by companies rather than the creators. And so the main ones that Hyperbull readers are probably interested in are things like Vampire Diaries, Pretty Little Liars, Gossip Girl, things like that. But they've got 50 already on the site. And authors can write their fan fiction and sell it, and then other people can buy it. So, you know, that's like a plus side. The downside is that if you submit your fan fiction, that can be used as the basis for other stories written in that world. So, for example, if you wrote like Vampire Diaries fan fiction, you could see the plot from your fan fiction end up in one of the books or like later on the TV show, and you wouldn't get any money for it. And no one would say like, hey, thanks for that great idea. That would just be, you know, your contribution and only you would know about it. So what do you guys think about this? This is like a pretty controversial development in the publishing industry right now.
I think it's going to fail. Actually, I mean, technically, I guess I can see why people would think it would be successful, but because there's free fan fiction, like, literally all over the internet, plus fan fiction that includes the stuff that most people who write fan fiction write for, like, smut and all that other stuff, and, like, slash pairings and all that other stuff, like, I feel like this is not going to be nearly as successful as, like, Archive of Our Own. Or, like, fanfiction.net or anything.
Right, because they've said it can't include pornography. I'm not sure if they've said anything about same-sex couples, but I guess that's kind of on the discretion of them.
We talked about that on Hype, and I can't remember whether or not there was actual proof, but there was something where Slash was not allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an issue, obviously, for fanfiction readers and writers, because that's a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else?
Plus, I mean, they have really, like, I'm looking at one of the stories right now, and one of them is for the Vampire Diaries. It's called Kilts and Fangs. So I'm like, okay.
Oh. I mean, I don't watch Vampire Diaries, but that sounds weird.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, like, getting more recognition for fan fiction writers, I think that this is a really great thing because a lot of people who write fan fiction are very, very talented. Some of the best things that I've read have been fan fiction. And it's great that they're getting their names out there. And this is sort of a stepping stone maybe to become actual novelists or something like that. And so I think, you know, on that front, I really like what they're doing. And I think that this is a huge step forward. But at the same time, like you guys were saying, with all the restrictions and the fact that, they could make it into a plot line for the TV show and this person wouldn't get any recognition, that's kind of crappy, to say the least, because that's your own work. And yeah, it's based off of something that already exists. But if the storyline is that unique, that they're that interested in using it in the show, I think it would be really nice to give them, you know, some recognition. Like, paying them would be obviously optimal, but, like, you know, at least a credit or something like that, that they could say, hey, look, you know, they liked my stuff so much, they put it in the show. But to not do that just seems really cheap to me. And I feel like they're taking advantage of the people who are going to be really into writing fan fiction.
See, that's what partly bothers me about this. The like, you always have people who write, you know, the Sweet Valley High books. Like, they were written by a million different authors, you know. But this is kind of tapping right into the people who are the most enthusiastic and the most, I guess, not necessarily vulnerable, but, like, the most open to this kind of exploitation because it's something that they love, you know. And I mean, I've written fan fiction before, and it's hard for me to think, like, oh, if there was a fandom that I was really into on this list, and I had an idea that I really liked, like, that would be hard to resist, like, that kind of opportunity. But at the same time, it's full of so many, you know, drawbacks and it just not being your own. And one of the amazing things that I've always loved about fan fiction is how organic it is and how kind of love based, you know. It's not a commercial endeavor. It's just that people love a property and they want to continue it. And, you know, I mean, I feel like once you do this, once you monetize it, once, like, even obviously, like, 50 fandoms is a quarter of a fraction of the amount of fan fiction that's written, but it kind of sets a precedent for people doing it for ulterior motives, and that just makes me really, really sad.
I agree, because I think that the quality is going to be going down with this, because, like you said, people write fan fiction for the love of it. They're super passionate about the fandoms that they're into, and they have the story inside of them, and they just can't help but write it. And then once you put, you know, money in the equation, people are going to be doing this, I think. Not all of them, but I think plenty of them are going to be doing this just because they could get money out of it. And I think the quality is going to go down and people probably aren't going to be going to this anymore because they're going to find better stuff for free. So, like you said, Kyle, I'm not really sure how long it's going to last.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. Obviously, the authors that submit their work, they make money when people buy it. And, like, just looking at this list, yeah, there's, like, a few standout things that you think maybe people might buy something from those fandoms. But when there's so much stuff available for free online, who is going to be buying this? Because you imagine the kind of people that would be interested in it are the really diehard fans. And those people already have their communities online, and, you know, they have Archive of Our Own and fanfiction.net, all of those things you guys mentioned. So I don't know. I guess to me it just seems like a weird kind of business move. They must think that there's a market for it, but I'm not sure sort of who they're trying to target with it, if you know what I mean, because those really diehard fans who you would think would be the most interested, they kind of don't need this. They can already get it for free.
I think they're trying to create a false kind of gatekeeper situation, you know, which is kind of what happens with, you know, publishing in general. And I mean, not that it's false in publishing in general, but they're trying to make, like, oh, well, you know, of course you could get the free stuff, but why would you do that when you could get a quality assured, you know, paid fan fiction? And, you know, I mean, it's, I agree. I think most fans are probably more savvy than that, because I think fans are usually more savvy than us, especially on the internet, than kind of the money-making things that are kind of tossed at them. But, I mean, there's always that possibility, you know, and again, just as a writer, that being hard to resist, like, oh, I could get paid for writing something that I love and possibly, you know, I mean, it almost becomes like, I could imagine a lot of people saying like, I don't care if they don't credit me on the TV show, my work would be on the Vampire Diaries. Like, who cares? You know, and that's, it's tempting. And, you know, not everybody has, and for good reason, because I'm saying this exactly for myself too, but like the kind of broad view to see that this would, something that like feels good, because writing that you love feels good, would be a bad move, not just for you, but kind of for the fan fiction / book industry in general.
I'm actually curious. No, I think you're right. I'm actually curious how many people that would sign up for this or participate in this actually know what they're kind of getting themselves into with regards to the copyright, because copyright is always a very, very tricky area, and fan fiction is a pretty gray area in general. I don't know, like, I just had a look on the website. It's not abundantly clear who owns what, as far as the work goes. So what I would hate to see, I guess, Mikhail, what you're saying makes sense. If someone is just really happy to be involved in that way and participate in that way, they don't care if they get the money or any kind of recognition, that's cool. But what about the people that do want that recognition and don't realize that they're essentially signing their story away by putting it online? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's... like, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like way too many people are going to be going into this going, oh, I can make money off like my story, that's great. And then they're going to write a story, and I can totally imagine one of the stories being used in like the Vampire Diaries or Pretty Little Liars, and then just staring at their TV going, wait, what that was mine. What's going on? So I feel really bad for anyone who decides not to read the fine print, because that's a lot of us. A lot of people don't decide to read the fine print. They just accept terms and conditions and go, okay, yeah, that's fine. Because, I mean, how many people actually read the terms and conditions of anything nowadays? And so it's important that these people who submit stuff to Amazon read that, but I feel like no one will. So Amazon's going to get away with a lot to be able to use that stuff in all the other media outlets.
Yeah.
Especially because it goes against kind of the way that fan fiction has been for so long, which is free and, you know, like copyright, like everybody who argues against fan fiction tries to throw in the copyright thing. And obviously that's nonsense because nobody's making money off of it. And I mean, it's a more complicated argument than that, but for people who really like fan fiction and write fan fiction, copyright has not become generally an issue, you know, unless you're like throwing your fan fiction in Orson Scott Card's face and then he's like, I will kill you and cut your fingers off. But, you know, it's so anathema to the community, you know, and it's like going from one kind of extreme of free expression. And I mean, there are problems with the fan fiction world, I'm sure, but for me it's just all very beautiful. And even when the writing is crappy, because it's free and you can do whatever you want, you know, and then once money and Amazon come into it, it's like, no, stay away from my nice little meadow.
Just to kind of play devil's advocate here, I kind of wonder if people really have the right to be upset if, like, say you write a story for the Vampire Diaries, they take it, they use that plot line in the show or whatever. Do the people really have the right to be upset about that? Because really, you're just borrowing characters and borrowing this story world from the people who own the original rights. And so technically, I mean, obviously, I don't really feel this way, and I can see where there would be some issues because it's still your plot line, but considering that you're kind of borrowing something from somebody else, if they decide to kind of take it back and use it, is there really anything to be upset about there? What do you guys think?
Well, that's what I think is so interesting about this, and that's why, to me, fan fiction is, like, such a gray area. It's not really about, like, yeah, I think it's great for authors to use as a way to explore their writing and work on it and blah, blah, blah. They've got established framework. That's great. I'm not a fan fiction reader myself, but I understand the appeal of it. This is so interesting because it's like a company that owns the copyright. It's not a person. So a lot of these kinds of books that come out will say on them, you know, created by whoever, but they're not written by that person anymore. And like you were saying, Sweet Valley High and all of those series that ran forever were written by 501 different authors. So I don't know if there is an answer to that, because it is kind of borrowing someone else's work. So in one way, I feel kind of weird about this. Just someone is making money off fan fiction, to me, will always be weird because it's not their creation. But then again, it is their plot, and whatever they've done with the characters, etc., has come out of their imagination, and that is original work, regardless of which characters it uses to execute it.
See, this is why I hate copyright and copyright discussions in general, obviously not being a lawyer and not knowing anything. But, you know, I feel like creative work is so hard to quantify, and you know, plagiarism and stealing work and misnaming work and all that is horrible. It's horrifying. And, you know, I mean, I can't even tell you the number of English classes that started with a lecture that I took in college, and as they should, and I totally am on board with that. But this is almost bringing something into it that shouldn't be there. You know, it's not, like, there's just no reason for it. And that's why I love that, like, fan fiction in general has kind of snubbed their nose at like, copyright. And it's almost like somebody playing with dolls in their room, and then, you know, and having this beautiful experience, and then somebody's like, and we're going to film you, and it's going to be all over the place, so anything you say belongs to us. And, you know, it's just very, just not in the spirit of creativity, I think, you know, which is why also I don't like packaging companies and things like that, even though I know they have their place and all that. But it seems like once you bring areas into the whole copyright thing that don't need to be there, it's not comfortable.
And this really isn't exactly the same thing, but speaking of copyright and everything, a lot of authors of original work don't have full rights to their works either. Your agent your publishing company can change your title, can change your cover. They have sort of the final word on it. And I think that, you know, we think of this as being very constricting, and it is, but I think it's a broader spectrum sort of issue, because there's a lot of control in publishing books in general. And I think that's why a lot of people like to self-publish, because they literally own every part of their story, and they can have the cover however they want it. They can have the title however they want it. And I think maybe, you know, it is sort of like a bigger issue with there being a lot of suffocation with the creativity because of the rights and everything that the companies have over somebody's story.
Yeah, I think you guys bring up some great points, and we should probably have a conversation about like packaging companies and self-publishing and all that kind of stuff at some point. So listeners, let us know if you're interested in that, but I think that would be really interesting. Speaking of fan fiction, we have another story that I think is super interesting and really weird. This was like super recently, the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which is a web series adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, has announced that they are going to be doing a novelization of the series. So basically, Lizzie Bennet Diaries adapted Pride and Prejudice. The novel is not an adaptation of the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. It's going to be like a novel of all the different things that happened in between the episodes that we saw. And it'll fit into the canon that way. So essentially, Lizzie Bennet Diaries is a fan fiction of Pride and Prejudice. And it just happens that Pride and Prejudice is a work that is outside of copyright, so they're able to commercialize it. And they did that through the web series, and now they're doing it through the novel. It's going to be published either spring or summer in 2014, and it's going to be published by, who is publishing it? Touchstone, who I think is a Simon & Schuster imprint. And what the showrunner said was it will be kind of around the vlogs. It will be a companion to what's already there and will be about what Lizzie already talks about in the vlogs. So it's going to be like behind the scenes but in character information. So I know not all of you guys watched the Lizzie Better Diaries, but this is following on from our conversation before about fan fiction. So what do you think about this?
I mean, I'm in a slightly funny position, and you know, in that I'm actually not a huge fan of Pride and Prejudice. Not like I hate it or anything. It just never, you know, particularly drew my attention. And I loved the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, and I actually loved Pride and Prejudice and Zombies too, actually. But I'm interested in how they plan on, you know, setting it up as a book, because, you know, in between the episodes is all well and good, but like part of the appeal was that there are missing spaces, and you know, it kind of makes me wonder, like, and then Lizzie went off to record video number 52, you know, which seems odd to me, but I don't know. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Anyone else? Even if you haven't seen the show?
It sounds cool. I mean, cool. I haven't... it sounds interesting. Yeah. I haven't seen the show. I haven't read the book, so...
You haven't read Pride and Prejudice?
No, I know. It's on my to-do list.
Okay. Me neither. Kyle, it's okay.
Kyle, no one dies in it, and it's not narrated by a male, so no one's expected that you've read it. But Karen, come on.
I know. It's on my list. I have trouble with the classics, and I've only recently been getting into it, and it's, but I have it on my shelf. Like, I'm looking at it right now, so I'll have to pull it down, because I really want to read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, too. So.
I tried reading that first, and then I was just like, wait, no, I can't do it.
Yeah, I would think you'd have to read the first one first to really kind of get where it's coming from.
Well, that's
I actually read that on audiobook. That was a really good audiobook. She had a really funny kind of narration style.
That would be a weird one to listen to. I actually just, this story that I wrote on Hyperworld, the comments on it are actually like the best comments I've ever seen. It's just everyone being like, there's already a novel. It's called Pride and Prejudice. and being annoyed about like the commercialization of things. But, you know, Lizzie Bennet Diaries isn't the first one to do it. Like you said, there was Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and there's Death Comes to Pemberley and all those books that are like sequels to Pride and Prejudice. So if Amazon Worlds is offering like current fandoms that are in copyright a way for people to sell their stories that way, maybe this will, you know, there'll be a trend towards people just publishing and selling things that are out of copyright, because there is a lot of stuff there, and it is to some extent already started, which I think is interesting.
Is this sort of like what people do with the twisted fairy tales, in that you have this like original story, but you kind of update it to make it modern, or you put like a different twist on it? Wouldn't the Lizzie Bennet Diaries kind of fall under that category too?
Yeah, well, kind of. I mean, the whole premise of it is that they're transported to the modern day, and Lizzie is a video blogger, and they change the characters and they combine some and et cetera. But the main story beats are all the same as Pride and Prejudice, and it's just they approach it in a slightly different way to make sense in the context of, you know, it's not a Regency production. So I guess, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess it fits both ways. I it's interesting to me that no one else has done this before. More so, like, they can't have been the first people to think, oh, if I just write a like modern day, you know, alternate universe fan fiction of this Frankenstein or whatever, oh, I can publish it and make a lot of money, you know. Well, maybe that's just my cynical nature.
Write something. I think like that's
next. Yeah,
it's quick. Interesting that there's so many stories now that are kind of being rehashed in this sort of way. And part of me is like, cool, you know, I really love the story. I really like the spin on it. But at the same time, it's like, I also want original content. We have so many stories and movies and books now that don't feel all that original anymore. And I actually read a really good quote the other day from Jeff Davis, who writes the Teen Wolf show. And he says that, you know, they were asked, like, why do so many people do this sort of thing where they kind of just rehash everything that's already been written and make it just slightly different and do these twisted fairy tale type of stuff. And they asked if we lack culture. And he says, no, we don't lack culture. We lack courage. And I think that's really cool. And although I like the twisted fairy tales and the premise between the Lizzie Bennet Diaries sounds really interesting, but I guess I just would really like to see a lot more original content.
Yeah. I agree. I don't like rehashing of stories as much as I like a good, like, original story. And I feel like, as much as I love, like, retellings of Frankenstein and retellings of, like, all these classic fairy tales, which are, like, becoming ridiculous nowadays with Hollywood and TV shows and everything, but, like, I feel like the thing I like about the book world is that it's not all retellings. It's not all, like, new things that are from old stuff. It's all legitimately creative things. And I feel like with the book world, it's one thing that's easily done is you can create something that's completely original and not have to worry about people being like, oh, that's just a rehash of blah, blah, blah. You know?
I actually totally disagree. I think that everything is to some extent, almost everything is to some extent a rehash. I mean, you can't read a review of something without it, you know, having, and this, you know, and this reminds me of this, and this reminds me of that, and the author pulled influences from this. I mean, like, there's, you know, going back to, like, the ancient Greeks, like, there's an idea that there's only, like, 7 stories that exist, period, and every story that we tell is only, you know, is just a different version of those stories, and I think that, like, anything, if it's done in a disrespectful or lazy or uncreative way, rehashing an existing story is bad and should not be done. But if it's done, you know, like the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, in a really, you know, innovative and just creative, you know, bringing their own interpretation to it, you know, that kind of way, and telling the story in a way that it could not have been told originally, because obviously, you know, Jane Austen lived in a very restricted society, and one of the things that was super interesting about Lizzie Bennet Diaries was seeing how they kind of circumvented that, well, women have to act a certain way and all that, you know, stuff that's such a huge part of the story. I believe my sister explained to me a lot of the nuances because she's a huge Pride and Prejudice fan. But I think that it's all fair game. I mean, it might because I really am actually writing something like this right now. But I think that, like with anything, as long as you do it in an artistically honest way, I agree that anytime anything gets popular, you know, you're going to have people hopping on the train and being like, well, okay, Rapunzel, how will I make this modern? But at the same time, you can have amazing stories told in that way. And like Lainey Taylor's Daughter of Smoke and Bone is sort of a retelling of Romeo and Juliet, which especially becomes clear toward the end. But it comes in such a way that you're just, like, awed by how she works it into the story. And I think we have to kind of accept that these stories, it speaks to the power of the original story, that they can still communicate with us and that we're still, you know, intrigued by them and want to have them in our lives, even if they're in different ways. So, you
know. Like, there's a difference between, like a retelling of a story and then, like, the whole idea of, like, there being 7 stories and everything is just, like, a different version of that. Like, there's, like, a total difference between someone, like, retelling the story of, like, Frankenstein or whatever, and then coming up with the story and then people going, oh, well, that's just, like, the Hunger Games, or, like, the Hunger Games is just, like, Battle Royale. And, like, I feel like that is a matter of readers reading into something that's not there, and readers, like, going, oh, well, you clearly had influences from so-and-so, whereas what I meant was people are coming up with their own original ideas that are legitimately and 100% their own ideas that they not necessarily retrieved from old stories or old things, and they've made them into their own, and then other people are like, well, this is kind of like this, actually. I mean, I know you didn't realize this, but I mean, it's pretty much the same thing, and I feel like it's just a little annoying when people, I mean, you can't get away with it. I know, as you said, there's not going to be a single book that doesn't have a review that says, oh, well, this is, like, blah, blah, blah. But that's what I like about books, is that with books, less people are going to be like, well, this is exactly like blah, blah, blah. With movies, people are like, oh, well, so they remade, like, Harry Potter for the fifth time in, like, 40 years from now or 50 years from now.
Oh, please, dude.
So, you know what I mean? Like, I get that there are, like, seven stories, but, like, the difference in that the author knowing that and realizing that they're doing it from a past story and the readers thinking that you're doing it from a past story. Like, did that make any sense?
Yeah.
I mean, I see what you're saying, but I still think that the author, it's almost better if the author is deliberately inspired by something, you know, because in that way it's you have to focus to make this story. It's like, let's be clear, like Snow White and the Huntsman, for example, like there are a ton of retellings of all of these things. A lot of them are not successful. The ones that are successful are the ones that come from a genuine place, a really creative place, and somewhere that people enjoy, you know, that brings something, that brings that creative spark to the table. Because once you're writing something that people know about and you're not hiding that similarity, people are going to be brutal with you. You know, is it too much like this? Is it too different? And you as the author have that challenge. I mean, obviously, I think people should write their own stories. I think people should use their own imaginations. But I don't think that one affects the other. You know, I think that it's not quite the same thing as, you know, fan fiction in terms of, like, you as an author, when you're retelling a story, you have to do a ton of legwork, a lot, you know. And with fan fiction, I mean, again, I adore fan fiction, but it's not quite the same thing. And, you know, I guess with the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, like with their book, which is, I guess, what we're talking about, it all depends. Like, I could see it being derivative and just like, oh, this is something that they want the DFTBA people to buy, you know. On the other hand, I think it could be really interesting. So I don't see that line between, you know, this is original creativity and this is not, because I think once you start looking at it that way, you fall into a trap of a lot of things being derivative that are wonderful, you know, and you can kind of miss the reality of that. And I don't remember what my B was, but I'm sure it would have knocked your socks off, Kyle.
Oh, you're all so persuasive. Well, speaking of being derivative, oh, I'm so good at transitioning. You guys are going to miss me next week. There is a new book trilogy, and it is a female Game of Thrones. Putting aside that is the world's most ridiculous description, and we're not going to get into that, like, feminist conversation, but let's just all agree that was a silly thing to say. No, because there's so much more to talk about. First of all, it hasn't been published yet, and it already has a film adaptation in the works starring Harry Potter's Emma Watson and being produced by Harry Potter producer David Heyman. The book was sold to HarperCollins for seven figures, and it won't be published until 2014. This is the most bizarre thing I have read in a very long time. So the book
it's a debut author as well.
Yeah, a debut author. The book has been described as a female, oh God, a female-oriented Game of Thrones, who apparently the people that wrote this press release have not read the books. That is also an insightful human story whose heroine is grappling with both the daily realities of coming of age and the ethical dilemmas of ruling. So it's called Queen of the Tearlings, and it's written by Erica Johansson. Johansson, silent H or not silent H, let us know on Twitter. Send your hate mail to Marama at Hyperball, who was partly inspired by a speech that she heard Barack Obama give in 2007. So much to talk about here, but what do you guys, what are your initial reactions to all of this craziness?
Well,
wait, okay. So can I talk about the Game of Thrones thing for a second?
Oh, go for it.
Okay. I'm just a rough rider today. So I agree that it's a weird description. Don't get me wrong. Because if you have read Game of Thrones, you know that it does have awesome female characters in it. But on the other hand, it's still something like 8 female characters to like 15 main male characters. I mean, it is a story told in a man's world about, you know, a lot of guys, you know. And so I understand what they mean by a female-driven Game of Thrones. Like, female-driven is not the same thing as female.
Oh, yeah. Well, if we're going to jump into this, I totally... We'll just do this quickly, because no one wants to listen to this for ages. This is all in the comments on Hyperball, so go crazy if you want to discuss this further. There are lots of people who are desperate to. I think most people's issue is that by calling it a female Game of Thrones, it doesn't immediately imply that it's just being told by female characters or that kind of thing. What it implies is that females can't read and enjoy Game of Thrones, that Game of Thrones is, well, A Song of Ice and Fire is books for boys, which is obviously ridiculous. Everyone can read A Song of Ice and Fire because it's awesome. And if you're awesome, then you can read it. So we don't need to like argue about all of that. Mikhail, I totally understand what you're saying, and I think they probably just failed on their wording in their press release, and that's all of that. But let's talk about the other stuff. Emma Watson, David Heyman, lots of money, whoa!
That whole sentence is just something that they thought of, and they're like, oh, let's just describe it like this, and like offhandedly, they didn't really think about it that much, and then they did the press release and then go, like, it's one of those things that you just write and then people notice after the fact, and you go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Step back one sec.
Wait, but hang on. That stuff is very important, though. Like, when you're pitching something, like, if you can really pitch something as Game of Thrones, you're going to want to do that. You know, I understand why. Like, that. I mean, I agree they probably didn't think about the depth of their wording, and even though people would still just abbreviate it to female Game of Thrones. But if they can use the words Game of Thrones, they will. And they're doing that.
And I think that's what got people interested. I think without saying, oh, it's kind of like a Game of Thrones story, you're like, you read the synopsis and you go, well, how in the hell is this kind of like a Game of Thrones story? This is just something about someone who's trying to reclaim a throne, like her deceased mother's throne. Like, and like there's dark magic and a Red Queen, but like, what aspect of this is going to be Game of Thrones? Is it going to be the fact that a whole bunch of characters are going to be dying? Is it going to be the fact that it's just set kind of like in the same era, kind of medieval type castle thing? Like, what about this, other than everything else, is going to make it Game of Thrones? You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what's the most interesting part, is that they say, oh, it's kind of going to be like Game of Thrones, but when you... How is the big question here?
But 7 figures. Why are we not talking about the money? This is like a huge amount of money.
It's not that. I mean, it is unusual, but it's not as unusual as I think people are making it out.
For a debut author, though?
Yeah, but I mean, it happens, you know? I mean, I think Erin Morgenstern got, I don't know if it was 7 figures, but I'm pretty sure her deal was good. And she was also a debut author. Very confusing. It's very hard to describe the Night Circus in an accurate way.
Oh, yes, it is.
it happens. Like, it happens.
Yay.
Sorry, Maram, I don't mean to, like, harsh your buzz. I'm just like, yeah, well.
Oh, no, but, like, I just think this is super interesting. Like, yes, lots of books get film deals before they're published. That's a fairly common thing. If a film studio thinks that a book has potential, they'll snap it up pretty damn quickly. But this already has a producer attached. It already has a star attached. It seems like they're working on this to come out, I guess. I mean, they haven't announced a release schedule for the books, but I imagine it would be something like one a year, you know, maybe 2014, 15, and 16, something like that, because she's already written them all, obviously.
I wouldn't say that necessarily.
Well, she's they've definitely planned them out. I mean, you know, they've signed her up for a trilogy, so there's enough material there, obviously. They've determined that. So, like, when is this film going to, you know, when are they planning on the film coming out? Is it going to come out right after the book is released? And who is this random author? I know there's some crazy rumors floating around the internet. And what is it all about? I just think this is really interesting.
Can we just talk about those rumors for a second? Because I think that's amazing.
Do you want to... all right, you take us through them as the world's Tumblr expert.
Well, I only know one, but that's...
Yeah, well, okay. I think there is only one.
There is really only one for those people who haven't thought of it yet. But there's a big rumor that the fact that the author is really J.K. Rowling under a pen name, given that it has a whole bunch of Harry Potter connections, like Emma Watson and David Heyman, and the fact that she's getting paid a seven-figure deal on her debut book is so, like, rare and so interesting. So people think maybe that's why this is getting so high up on the project list, is that, oh, J.K. Rowling is coming up with a new book, but we don't want her to come up as J.K. Rowling because people are just going to associate this with Harry Potter. Like, so I feel like that's a really interesting thing, and I feel like it's actually a viable rumor, you know? I can totally imagine, like, J.K. Rowling calling Emma Watson or David Heyman going, hey, so I'm working on this new book that just picked up the movie rights. I would love you two to, like, be a part of this, or like the people who picked up the movie rights going, we should get Emma Watson to be a part of this, you know? So it's interesting that two Harry Potter connections are connected to the movie.
All right, I'm just going to correct you really quickly before everyone on Twitter does. Oh, rolling like bowling.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone calm down. It's fine. We've got it. I just want to say something really funny, which is that I just Googled this author to be like, what does she even look like? And the very first picture that comes up is just a pile of money. Just like a pile of money. That's great.
Can we, like, ask the really big question now? What if it sucks and nobody likes it?
Well, exactly.
And they've already given her, like, you know, a seven-figure deal, there's a movie, there's stars. Like, what if nobody cares about this project?
Well, the movie can always be pulled. But they have given it a lot of early publicity for something that no one's read.
That's the key. I mean, like, once you start off with something like this, I mean, I don't even know, like, what does that even mean? Like a director is attached. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to say, I always thought that Joe would do something like that. I always thought she would publish under a pen name and everybody would be like, what's this awesome book? And yeah, I don't know that the money would be publicized in that case though, but I'm not as impressed with the whole, like, David Heyman's attached to direct and like Emma Watson's attached to star. Like, people are attached to things all the time and then flake out. You know, or it just takes too long and they're working on other projects or they age out or they die, you know.
And depressing.
That was right up my alley, though.
That escalated quickly. Yes. Continue.
But I guess I'm just not as, like, intrigued by it. Also, maybe on the opposite, to argue against it being J.K. Rowling, you know, why would Emma Watson want to do another J.K. Rowling project? You know, I mean,
Oh, conspiracy.
Oh.
No, I actually really don't think it's J.K. Rowling, but...
I think it would be really cool if it was.
It would be so cool, but would we actually ever find out if it was? Would she tweet, be like, jokes, guys, I wrote that book. See you later. That would be a great use of her Twitter if she ever did that.
Oh, man, that would be great.
You should use it for something, for Pete's right? sake.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that we're going to find out it's not her. Like her publicity team is probably going crazy. Like, okay, we need to stop this right now because this is not happening. And I feel like they'll eventually come out with a press release saying, hey, this is not J.K. Rowling. Sorry.
J.K., not J.K.
Low J.K. Rowling. Oh, that joke is... J.K. trolling. I win. Okay, does anyone want to say anything else about this? I mean, the only thing is, like, really, the Red Queen? That's a terrible villain. And I don't know how to pronounce the name of the neighboring country, but that's not, you know, rare for high fantasy. Anyone else have anything to say about possible J.K. Rowling trolling Emma Watson, whatever?
I'm excited to read it. I mean, I think it could be, you know, if it's worthy of the, you know, if the quality makes it worthy of the attention that it's getting, then I'm excited to read it. I mean, you know, I'm always, you know, looking for a fantasy that really pulls me in. And we do need more female-driven stuff. I know there's plenty. I feel like people are going to be like, there's this fantasy and this fantasy. There is. That's true, 100%.
Good. We need tell a lot us of- those. Send them to yeah. us.
I know Mistborn by Brian Sanderson has a female main character.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the hype right now for this is kind of really getting my attention. So I guess they're doing their job right. And I probably will pick it up when it comes out, unless I hear a lot of bad press about it. But I'm definitely interested. I'll give it a try.
Kyle, you into it?
Oh, yeah, I'm absolutely interested. I'm definitely going to attempt to read this thing.
Good summary.
Thank you.
I liked it.
Isn't that funny when you say something that's like...
Okay, so that wraps it up for our book discussion. Let's get into some listener feedback, because we love hearing what you guys have to say, and you had a lot to say about our adaptations podcast, especially once we got into the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, Karen, do you want to take that first one?
Sure. Daisy Duck says, disagree about The Vampire Diaries, though. The TV series is far better than the books, which are utter trash. Same goes for True Blood. And I don't actually remember what we said on the last podcast, but I know a lot of the people that I've talked to and who have read both the books and seen the TV show actually do really like the series a lot better than the books. Mm-hmm. As far as The Vampire Diaries go, I don't know anything about True Blood.
I wasn't on the episode where you guys discussed the good, the bad, and the ugly, but had I been there when you said that The Vampire Diaries was a horrible adaptation, I would have smited one of you, whoever said it, because...
I don't know who even put that on the list, because I don't think any of us even watch it.
Yeah, so I don't understand, because Vampire Diaries is actually, it's a fantastic adaptation. It's one of those books, it's one of those series that the book, the media gets so much attention, like the movie, and like people go, oh, let me try like to read the book and see if it's any good. And the book is so vastly different, you can't get past it. It's crazy, and the plot developments are so much longer in the series. Like Elena turns into a vampire in the first book on the book series, and it if that does happen, I'm not saying if it does, it takes much longer too.
Spoilers! I was just about to start watching that. Now you've ruined it for me.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. Well, that was definitely... A lot of people agreed with that. A lot of people had that to say. So we're sorry, vampire fans. I'm sure the shows are really great. I personally haven't watched them. But, you know, vampires are awesome. Mikhail, do you want to take that next one from Alex?
Yeah, sure. Alex says, The Hunger Games movie was at best case, a very poor adaptation. Everyone who has read the book and seen the movie knows that. And I mean, I it's funny because I think there were quite a few people who saw the movie who were like hardcore fans and didn't like it. But like, I came out of that movie being like, oh my God, that was an amazing adaptation. Like, it made me feel so connected to everything that was going on. I thought that it was visually really powerful, seeing all these kids, you know, who were doomed, and you know, I thought it was a really good adaptation. So I support your opinion, Alex, but you're right to the opinion, but I do not support your opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked The Hunger Games. I think I was actually the one that said that. Sorry, Alex, but I thought The Hunger Games was a great adaptation of the books.
I agree.
But really good.
Oh yeah, it's one of the nicest adaptations that I've seen. Mm. Definitely,
I think it really got the point of what the book was about, and from what we've seen of Catching Fire so far, I think they're really on the right track to get the whole series right. Although splitting the last book is like a different issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
you know what I realized?
Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go.
What I kind of realized was that in the books, Katniss is the main character. In the movie, the Hunger Games were the main character, and that created a really nice tension. At least for me, I thought it worked really well.
What I don't like about like Alex, you're absolutely entitled to your opinion. That's great. But the thing that everyone who has read the book and seen the movie knows that it was a very poor adaptation. I feel like that was a very stark generalization about just a lot of people. And I feel like there are people who think, oh, yeah, The Hunger Games was not that great because they didn't do the pin and they didn't do this and they didn't have Madge. But I feel like it's all subjective, I think. So I think some people are going to like adaptations of books into movies and some people are going to hate them. So I feel like no one should ever generalize and go, everyone thinks that this is pretty bad. Like, everyone just, you know, I don't know why, but there's just, lately, people have been generalizing everyone into one thing, and I'm like, no! So.
Whoa. Cool.
I might edit that bit out.
I think that's fine. I feel bad like we're ganging up on Alex, but no. You know what, Alex? Like, I've seen you commenting on Hyperball. You know how to hold your own opinion. I don't think you'll have any trouble with this.
Absolutely.
Okay, and we've got one from Twitter. Kyle, did you want to grab that?
Yes. So Shimon says from Twitter, enjoyed the episode. Did I miss it or was there no mention of Sherlock? And I don't know. Was there a mention of Sherlock? Was there not? I wasn't there.
I thought I mentioned it, but then I listened to the episode and I was like, holy cow, we didn't talk about Sherlock.
Yeah, we failed you guys on that one.
Yeah, but like, which Sherlock were you going to be talking about? Are you going to be talking about the Robert Downey Jr. Movies or like the actual Sherlock TV show? Like, which do you guys think is more accurate, the TV show or the movie?
Well, what about Elementary?
Mm-hmm. Or Elementary, yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that's
why. Well,
we're
going for accuracy.
I really wanted Elementary to be about Sherlock Holmes having to teach third graders. I thought that would have been amazing.
That would be great. I actually watched, like, my first episode of Elementary the other day, and it was right in the middle, so, you know, I didn't know exactly what was going on. But I really liked it.
I watched the pilot episode, and I was like,
a surprising amount. Did you like it? Because I'm a big Sherlock fan, as in of the BBC.
I remember last year when it aired, like, me and Laura and a whole bunch of other Hyperbole staff was like, oh, let's watch this. It sounds really good. And then, like, we watched it, and none of us liked it because of whatever her name is. What's her name?
Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu. Because of Lucy Liu, she was just so boring, and her face was, like, just nothing. And so I don't think any of us really watched past the pilot.
I haven't seen the pilot, but the episode I saw was really good. And I heard that they did something really cool with Moriarty on that show that I don't want to spoil if no one has seen it. But that was, like, super interesting to me. They put a really cool twist on that. I don't think any of the adaptations of Sherlock are, like, incredibly accurate. No. They're all very entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone's actually read the Sherlock Holmes books, it's not that exciting. They're really great. Don't get me wrong. I love Sherlock Holmes. I adore Arthur Conan Doyle. But they're all very unique adaptations in their own special way. I'll say diplomatic, you guys. Did you hear that just then?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's ever happened on this show before. Oh. All right, one more thing from Twitter, and I'm just reading it because it's really flattering. And it's not about me. Oh, actually, no, it's not about me. this is about book hype in general. This is from Ashley Laurel, and she says, discovered your podcast a few days ago, and I adore it so much that she put it in capital letters. Never stop! ! So, guys, I know that we were going to quit after this episode, but Ashley's asked us to never stop, so I guess we'll have to keep going.
Absolutely.
We also have some really nice reviews on iTunes. Remember, you guys can leave us a rating and a review. Personally, I would like to encourage all the Australian listeners to do that because I can't see the American ones and it makes me really sad. But Michaela is going to read one of those for us now.
Yeah, so our most recent one is from Katie. She calls us a fantastic listen. I love listening to podcasts throughout the day at work, and Book Hype is my new favorite. The books reviewed so far have all been great, and the discussions on them are particularly well done. My to-read list continues to grow in length after every episode. That's perfect. That is our total goal. And I can't wait to start on so many new books and genres I might never have picked up otherwise. Thanks for such a great podcast. Thank you for such a great review, Katie. And the other reviews are beautiful too, but they're from a little bit longer ago.
Yay, Katie.
Yay. And Samantha, Ashley. I'll suck up with you.
So guys, if you suck up to us, we will read your comments. I can guarantee, unless Jen comes back and then she'll crack the whip and we'll do what she tells us. Hey, we miss you, Jen. Come back.
We miss you,
please.
Speaking of sucking up to people and we'll read their comments, that is a perfect segue into me reading one from David Ludwig on Twitter, who said, I just finished listening to the most recent episode of Book Hype, and I agree with you the most, meaning me, especially on Percy Jackson. So thank you, David, because apparently nobody else agrees with me, so I really appreciate that.
Oh, well...
Wait, did you think Percy Jackson was a good adaptation?
Yes.
Well, okay. Good. This is time to we can finish up with our brand new segment. One time only. It'll never happen again, most likely. People that agree with Karen about things on Book Hype. So we had David, and we also had Lily and Guest 18 on Hyperball, who agreed with you about Twilight, that it wasn't a bad adaptation. It was just that it really wasn't the greatest piece of literature, but the adaptation from book to film was not awful. So, Karen, you've got your fan club, and I'm jealous.
Nice. Three people.
The rest of us just get hate mail. Karen get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, right. I have never gotten hate mail, I should say, but...
Well, when you do...
It is fun.
I aspire to it.
Oh.
It's something controversial.
Yes. Well, on that note, let's wrap up. Remember, you can get in contact with us on Twitter, where we love to hear your book recommendations, all the nice things you have to say to us. If you disagree with Karen, please let us know. Twitter.com/bookhype. And you can find us on hyperball.com, where we post book news every single day. We've got reviews, interviews, lots of fun things coming up. And of course, on Hyperball, we also have other things. So if you need a break from reading, check out our movies, TV, news, all of that kind of stuff. Thanks for listening. I'm Marima.
I'm Karen.
Dang it.
Oh, sorry.
Wait. Wait, should we mention Fault in Our Stars?
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah, let me do that real quick. Damn it. I just turned into Jen.
Okay.
Okay, I can't remember what we said. Oh, yeah. Okay, after the Twitter. Do after the Twitter bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Whatever, I don't care. I'm not editing. And just to let you guys know that the next book we'll be reading for our Book Hype book club will be The Fault in Our Stars by John Green, which is one of the books that Hyperball readers voted for when we had our poll a little while ago. So that may not be on the next episode, but it will be on one of the upcoming ones. So if you haven't read it yet, maybe check out Audible and get the audiobook. Or, you know, if you've read it before, which I'm sure a lot of you have, do a reread, freshen up. Let us know either on this post for the podcast on Hyperball or via Twitter what you think about it, what you'd like us to talk about, and that'll be on an upcoming episode. So with that, thanks for listening. I'm Marima.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Michal.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.